Okay, Levi, it is it's our fourth episode, and I gotta tell you, I am officially not feeling 2020 anymore. I had a rage headache for most of the day. I finally got rid of that thanks to a combination of pharmaceuticals and what are we drinking? We're drinking something today.
We're drinking the Sequench Ale by Dogfish Head Brewing. And yeah, it's a session sour, and it's almost like a margarita in a can.
You know a lot more about beer than I do, despite my drinking history.
Yes.
Because you're a professional in the industry. You're a professional in the beer and coffee industry.
I'm a professional beer nerd. I don't have my license yet, working on it. But
yeah. Okay, well, I mean, all I've got is liver damage for my credentials. Mm-hmm. But Sequench, which complements the movie that we're going to talk about today, Shockwaves, much of which is on the water or underwater. Mm-hmm. Sequench Ale, Session Sour. I'm not usually a big fan of sours, but then again, if it had alcohol in it right now.
Right. And it tastes like a margarita. It's Labor Day, y'all. Cheers.
Yeah, cheers to all the effort that went into getting the American working class
a day off.
Yeah, a single day off.
Labor Day is always so ridiculous to me. But that, which is why we didn't choose this movie because of that. But it's the end of summer. This is a summer movie that deals with spoiler alert, underwater Nazi zombies.
Underwater Nazi zombies. And what more do you need for your entertainment? But listen, this ties into my introduction because I've kind of had it with 2020. And I know a year isn't like a neat container, I know the misery or the dysfunction or whatever isn't going to stop just because the clock, kicks over. But it's like you're standing on a mountain of shit and you're holding a bag of shit. A bag of shit is still a meaningful container.
Sure.
Measurement, don't you think?
A bag of shit, yeah. I think it's something like 2.5 gallons. Well, something like that.
2020 is our bag.
Yeah, yeah.
but I think it ties into the movie simply because this movie involves a Nazi experiment gone wrong. How could a Nazi experiment go right?
What does
it mean? It's a Nazi experiment of super soldiers who were made to operate beneath the water and around the water. Anyway, all I'm saying is that the fact that this movie deals with what was thought to be a defeated and forgotten ideology literally rising from a watery grave to imperil the living has absolutely no contemporary political ties to what we're living through right now. And I want to stress that.
Yeah, no, none whatsoever.
None whatsoever.
We do not take a political stance
because this is
show.
Not a political podcast.
That's correct. So yeah, fascism coming out of the water.
And so all I'm saying is if you step out of your house tomorrow and there are underwater Nazi zombies, coming for your door, it's not my fault.
It's not our fault either. Yeah, no.
If that happens, you should get some of this Dogfish Head Sequench Ale and we'll make the best of it.
Enjoy. Yeah.
Speaking of making the best of it, we've got a new bit. This is going to be a regular bit. This is all thanks to Levi and his used bookstore browsing.
Yes, yes.
But we have a copy of The Devil's Dictionary by Ambrose Bierce. When was that published?
Originally. Let's see. It says here, it's 1906. It was originally titled The Cynic's Word Book, but then retitled The Devil's Dictionary.
That second title's much better.
Yes,
The Cynic's Word Book.
And it's all in red with gold lettering. The cover is. It's hardback.
I'll try to remember to put a picture in the show notes so that people can see it because it is a nice looking book.
Yes, it is. And it caught my attention and I grabbed it and quickly flipped through it and knew this would be a purchase I would not regret.
What did that run you, by the way, I gotta give a plug to the bookshop. Mm-hmm. The incredible Dixon Street Bookshop, one of, if not the best, used bookstore in the world, just reopened after being closed because of the collapse of civilization due to COVID. Just reopened. Mm-hmm. What did that cost you there?
It's $5.99.
$5.99.
Yeah.
$5.99 for the Steel. Devil's Dictionary. Mm-hmm. All right, so you've got a starting definition for us.
Yes. This week's word from the Devil's Dictionary is absurdity, noun. A statement or belief manifestly inconsistent with one's own opinion.
And Lord knows none of us have encountered that bit of cognitive dissonance at all in the last 12, 18, 24 months.
Not at all, no.
I mean, things have been going great.
Things are great. People seem happy. No one disagrees with one another. If only
and,
that were...
And when we do disagree, so. We have calm, reasonable conversations
rational
about it.
Rational
and we,
yeah.
we come to equitable conclusions mm-hmm. in which both sides compromise and everything's mm-hmm. fine.
Everything's great.
I love the future.
Yes, if only that were so.
How many of these can I drink while we record?
Well, we only have one right now in front of us, so...
Don't you worry. There's four more in the fridge.
All right. Let's get started with 1977's The Shockwaves.
Shockwaves.
Or no, yeah, just Shockwaves.
Just Shockwaves. And so when we said that this was a movie about underwater Nazi zombies, that's not, there's no hyperbole there. This is a movie about underwater Nazi zombies.
Straight up. And most of the movie is shots of said Nazi zombies under the water. And I mentioned this to you earlier. It's got a great Creature from the Black Lagoon feel.
It does.
It's shot mostly in daylight. They're trekking through these lagoons on this desert island because they saw a mansion from the water.
Oh, well, let's set up how they get there. So
yeah, let's set it up.
So it starts with a great trope, which is the lone survivor found floating in a dinghy in the open ocean.
Well, it starts as a mockumentary almost.
Oh, no, you're right. Yeah. You got a mockumentary where you have this dry sort of news broadcaster voice explaining that toward the end of the of World War II, when the Nazis knew they were losing, they were working on developing these super soldiers who could fight in any climate and under any conditions.
Including underwater.
And so that sets us up. You're absolutely, you've got this sort of old newscaster voiceover, which is great. And then we jump to the lone survivor found floating in a dinghy mm-hmm. by a helpful fisherman and his son.
Yep. And she's narrating it's trope.
Yeah. It's voiceover after the fact, because when she's found, she's basically incoherent because she's been floating in the open ocean after she got away from underwater Nazi zombies, guys. You survived mm-hmm. that. You're going to have an issue or two.
And Rose is her name yes. in this film.
And she is, that actress is perfectly cast. She's beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
She's got a great presence.
Yeah, you're not like, she doesn't come across as like completely helpless.
No, not at all.
Which is a trope in a lot of horror movies, you know. But we like the ones where the ladies fight back.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So, and this would be one of those.
So she's found after floating in this dinghy, and mm-hmm. then we sort of jump back in time to, you know, how her story originally began, where she's on basically a pleasure cruise.
Mm-hmm.
She and a group of other passengers have, they've booked a trip on a...
it's a yacht.
Is it a yacht?
Some form of a yacht.
I don't know enough about boats.
Yeah, I would call it a yacht.
It's a boat big enough for like 12 people, you know, who just want to go... You don't browse the ocean.
No.
What do you do in the ocean?
I don't know what they were doing.
It's a pleasure cruise. I guess maybe they're island hopping?
Yeah, it seems that way. It almost feels like they're on like the couples on a honeymoon. They have that very nerdy, like annoying couple. Most of the used car salesman. Yeah, most of you have seen Jurassic Park 3 and William H. Macy's character and... his wife in the movie kind of remind me of this, where they're just kind of hopeless and annoying. But then there's the assistant to the captain. We'll go into the captain here in a second because I've got a lot to talk about this guy.
Captain's great. He's the perfect grizzly old seaman.
And
S-E-A-M-A-N.
And then Rose is kind of like the third wheel to this couple, almost, because...
She's there specifically so that... The captain's navigator, who he heaps abuse upon, although I don't think is that bad.
Yeah, no.
So that they can have a love interest.
Yeah.
That's never consummated, because it's really hard to get to second base when you're being chased around by underwater Nazi zombies. And I know that from my personal experience.
Yeah, and this, and I'm pretty sure it like takes place in like real time too. Like they, like it doesn't cut to a week in advance.
No, you're right. It feels that way.
Yeah, they're running from zombies almost the entire time.
So they're on this pleasure cruise. You've got David Carradine.
Oh, my God.
We have to talk about David Carradine. David Carradine is the grizzled old captain who has clearly lost whatever interest he may have originally had in customer service as a pleasure boat captain. Yes.
He plays that grizzled role so well. And I recognize his voice almost instantly. Some of you might. It's a little older, but he actually narrated a 1972 animated Legend of Sleepy Hollow. And I'd seen that,
I don't remember that
as a kid so many times. And that's, I like instantly recognized this guy's voice as like a horror icon. He's in a lot of horror movies, mainly horror movies.
When I see him, I think of The Howling.
Yeah, he's in The Howling. I was going to mention that. Yeah.
And I think I have this story right, but Joe Dante, who directed The Howling, tells a story about how he was really, he was sort of despairing that the movie wasn't going to be very good and wasn't going very well. And he told David Carradine, you know, between takes or whatever, you know, I bet this isn't the best movie you've ever been in, or I'm certain this isn't going to be the best movie you've ever been in. And David Carradine looked at him and said, well, son, it won't be the worst either.
This one was, yeah. Might have been the
this
worst.
This one might have been the worst.
Because this was before that, yeah. He was also in House of the Long Shadows, 1983. That's also with Peter Cushing and the great Christopher Lee. God, I love those two together.
Peter Cushing makes an appearance in this movie a bit later.
Yeah, well, don't worry. I'll talk about Peter Cushing.
We're going to get to Peter Cushing.
He's, again, the 1972 Legend of Sleepy Hollow, The Howling. He's in Silent Night, Bloody Night. Great title. Great, great horror movie.
The we might Christmas cover that. One?
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
My God. We might have cover to that. Do that. This, yeah. Have to when it's Christmas time.
He's also in The Ten Commandments. So I bet a lot of people would recognize him possibly from that movie or that film. But yeah, let's. He's not in the film a lot.
No.
I think it's something like he was on set for the same amount of time that Peter Cushing was, which is like 5 days.
Yeah. It's one of those where their actual screen time greatly outweighs the presence they lend to the movie. Much like Silence of the Lambs. I mean, Anthony Hopkins as Hannibal Lecter is what, 11 minutes 11 of screen minutes. Time?
Yeah.
And if you take him out of the movie, there's no movie.
Yeah. And Vader's only in A New Hope for 15 minutes. One of those things too. But yeah, he's not in the movie long, sadly. But then Peter Cushing comes around. Anyway, there's a ghost ship in this film, which I thought was great. And the way they kind of do it is neat because it's supposed to be at dark when this happened, when they see the ghost ship, but the sky kind of lights up in this yellow.
I feel like maybe they didn't have the budget or the patience to wait for darker skies.
Yeah, yeah.
So they just applied like a filter. A dark orange sort of filter.
Mm-hmm.
And it's interesting because supposedly, so these underwater Nazi zombies, never get tired of saying that phrase. These underwater Nazi zombies have been, just under the water and not seen for years and years and years, which you find out why later. But the arrival of this a pleasure boat getting too close to the island seems to be what triggers this sunken wreck that took the underwater Nazi zombies there originally, triggers this sunken wreck and sort of wakes them up. And there's this orange sky and this very odd visually scene where the pleasure boat encounters the suddenly raised wreck and almost runs into it.
Mm-hmm.
And the passengers, of course, are very upset because it's this bizarre looking thing right in front of them. And there's a scene. Ship. Yeah. And there's this ghost ship, right? And there's a scene where they're talking to the captain, like, you know, what the hell? We're worried. And he's like, I've seen all kinds, you know, David Carradine.
Yeah.
Like,
it's so good.
Who gives a damn? It's just whatever.
It's so warm and that inviting guy, his grumbly voice.
As a captain, that guy needed to retire at least 5 years ago.
Oh, he doesn't give a shit about no, his he's done. His boat. He just doesn't care.
And his junior navigator, who he the character who he just loves to abuse, even though he's not a bad navigator.
No, and for the ladies out there, he kind of looks like a longer-haired Zac Efron with a mustache. Look it up.
Boom. Occurred to me, but you're
man,
right.
All I could see was Zac Efron when I watched this film. It was it's like they're Zac Efron with a mustache.
And
it's
of all the male characters in this movie,
yeah.
If you're gonna be stuck with one of them,
yeah,
in a underwater Nazi zombie kind of situation, mm-hmm. he's the one you want, right?
Yeah, and he's got a tight jeans with bell bottoms at the end. You know, because 70, actually this film was shot in 75. It wasn't released until 77. Because I was looking to see if Peter Cushing was shooting Star Wars at the exact same time as this. And they didn't shoot Star Wars until 76. So he shot this before Star Wars.
But both movies were released the same year.
Both movies were released in the same summer, yeah.
Shockwaves and Star Wars. Mm-hmm. Mr. Peter Cushing. Oh, I wonder which one he was most proud to be.
Neither, probably. I know, because
he didn't make nice... He didn't really care about Star Wars.
Yeah, he wore slippers all over the set. You know, he at this point in his career, he was kind of a prima donna. Like, I read about this film. He requested that he stay in a 5-star hotel or they will have to fly him back via private jet to London every day. And he needed, like, his tea, and he needed his sherry, and he needed his slippers. And love, he's a tremendous actor, guys. He's been in... well over 20, I think it's something like 25 horror movies where he plays Baron Frankenstein like in 4 films. But by this point in his career, he's kind of, you know, into himself and being a British actor.
I expect the same treatment when I walk into our favorite coffee shop.
Well, that's...
I mean, you know, I need...
get that treatment,
I need my sparkling water.
Mm-hmm.
I need my espresso. Mm-hmm. I got to have my blueberry muffin.
You got to have your Wi-Fi code, too. Those are the slippers. The Wi-Fi code
is... Wi-Fi code are my slippers.
What good is a coffee shop without Wi-Fi in 2020? But anyway, moving forward...
So I want to... You know, we mentioned... what was the lady's name who plays the brunette there, the survivor?
Rose.
Rose. What's the actress's name? Do we know?
No,
I do not.
I have not looked that up.
Well, you look that
so
up.
Sorry, guys.
And I'm gonna make a comment about women's bodies that I don't think men are supposed to make anymore.
Okay.
Maybe we were never supposed to make them. I just want to say, one of the things that I love about movies from this period, aside from the fact that in horror movies, you know, they're not shy at all about showing you how beautiful the actresses are, but is that they don't look like they arrived off of a NASA spaceship where they spent the entire time drinking protein shakes and exercising like the Soviet enemy in that Rambo movie.
Yeah, no, they...
That got a little deep. You know what I'm saying?
It's a realistic depiction of a woman.
It looks like
her beauty.
It looks like she looks like... I mean, she's attractive,
mm-hmm.
but there's a scene in which she's getting into the water later and she bends over slightly, and she's got a little belly. Because human beings, when they bend over slightly, most of us...
have a little belly.
Got a little belly. And she's still, you know, gorgeous and has a wonderful screen presence. But
yes.
I just wanted to throw that out there as it's nice to see a beautiful woman who looks like a human being and not something that was made in a lab.
Yeah, and the sad thing about that is because this film was made when it was made, is probably because they didn't have... No, I'm not even going to say that because, okay, so Brooke Adams is her name. She plays Rose. She's in Invasion of the Body Snatchers. She's in The Dead Zone. And she's also in a Terrence Malick film that I love called Days of Heaven.
I can't do the Terrence Malick films. We'll have to talk about that in another time.
Yeah, we'll do that some other time. But
I hate movies that have ideas. That's all I'm going to say.
Yeah, she's also, which is why we battle so much on horror films. She's also in Frasier, which is one of my all-time favorite shows. But
great actress, beautiful lady.
She's still alive. Yeah, she's still alive. So,
so they find the ghost ship. They see the ghost ship rise. They immediately run into something. What did they run into? The boat. The boat hits something.
A reef.
Okay, mm-hmm. They hit the reef. You got to watch out for those reefs when you're out there by the islands, fellas.
That's true.
Ocean's a dangerous place.
It's true.
And they have no choice but to go to the nearest island, which is, you know, within sight of the reef.
Mm-hmm.
They get in their little rowboats.
Mm-hmm.
They head to the nearest island, and it seems okay at first.
Yeah, there's even a mansion.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, it looks friendly.
So the first thing they encounter is a very elaborate, although decrepit, mansion where there is classical German music playing through, like, a Victrola.
Yeah,
and I want to say this.
Mm-hmm.
If you ever find yourself on a tropical island and there is what was obviously once a beautiful, elaborate mansion that is now decrepit, and you hear German classical music playing through a Victrola, you were basically in the same situation as though you were deep in the Arkansas woods and suddenly heard a banjo. Yeah. By which I mean you need to turn your ass around.
Run.
And run.
Yeah.
Or swim. You can't stay there.
That's a sign to me is like, okay, someone's been living here. They obviously don't care about the state in which they live in. And it's actually a resort that went out of business, and they got the okay to film there. And I think that the director had to pay like something like $250
to film there.
But now it's been like over the years after this film, it had been restored, and now it's fully operational and takes in tourists all over the place. It reminded me of a Disney World resort. When I went to Disney World, we stayed at the Caribbean part of the soul sucking thing that is Disney World. And it reminded me a lot of this because the palm trees and the architecture and the leaves from the palm trees are in the entryway. And it just kind of reminded me of a resort that I had stayed in when I was a child. And because it is a resort. But it's also haunted by Sir Peter Cushing.
Sir Peter Cushing, who is the who we quickly discover, actually not that quickly. Because when our stranded pleasure boaters find him, he's just a figure who won't even show himself. He's speaking to them from the second story in the shadows. And basically all he says is, you guys need to get the fuck out of here.
Please leave. Yeah. And they, who are you? Where are you? You know, all this stuff. And when we finally do see him and I noticed this, cause I watch things in closed captioning, they never say his name in the film, but in closed captioning, when he speaks off camera, it says Scar. Because he has that,
yeah, he's got that
giant scar running down his face. Yeah, and he's wearing like torn up military garbs. And they're like olive drab too. They're not like SS gray. They're olive drab. So it's almost like he took clothes from an American soldier or something. I don't know. But he's very skinny in this film.
Yes. As befits someone who's been living alone on a deserted
island. Yeah, and I don't know if that was just a choice or if that's just Peter Cushing.
He's just living off gin at that point.
I mean,
he's
famous for his cheekbones.
Yeah.
You know, the man is an incredible actor and an incredible presence. He rolls his R's in a certain British way that is pretty unique to me.
But here's the one thing. Here's the one thing his character does not do. Okay, his character tells them, again, he's like in shadows. He's on the second story. He's talking down to them. They've just stumbled into this mansion with the weird classical music playing. He tells them that they need to leave and then they're not welcome. But what he does not say is the water around this island is filled with Nazi zombies. Mm-hmm. And if you don't go very quickly, they're going to murder all of you. I feel like if he'd have thrown that out.
Yeah, they would have ran.
That they might have gotten their boat
maybe
fixed
not, though.
Faster.
It's a film. They might have.
There were some obstinate people. That used car salesman in particular.
Yes. Oh, God, he's annoying.
At 52 minutes, he tells his wife, when I want your opinion, I'll ask for it. Do you remember that?
Jesus. Yeah, I do. I do remember that. And that's where I get the William H. Macy couple from Jurassic Park 3.
Can you imagine saying that to a woman and not being hit in the face?
1975 was a different time. Yeah, no, I could never say that. And will never.
But Peter Cushing. So yeah, he doesn't, you know, he doesn't tell them that. He just says, you guys need to get the hell out of here. And then he disappears. And it's a huge mansion. Mm-hmm. They don't know where to find him. Mm-hmm. And so there's, again, I've said this before, but one of the things that I love about these older movies is the pacing. You know, they take their time. They let the dread build.
They do.
There's not a jump scare every 30 seconds. You don't need it. You know, it's a slower kind of thing. You got to let it go. And the score does a lot here. This is another great score. Mm-hmm. This was available on vinyl for the longest time.
Wow, I didn't know that.
I don't know if it still is. But I only know that because I spent like 2 weeks at night during my things I want to buy on Amazon but shouldn't time.
Oh, yeah.
You know, browsing like we do.
I do that a lot.
Like we do.
I did it a lot more when quarantine was.
You mean when we had a functional economy? Yeah, I did.
Yeah.
God, that was a great time, wasn't it?
And I wasn't concerned on if
before we were a developing
businesses
nation.
Were going to shut down and I would lose my job, just because people. Anyway, we're not going to get into that.
there's no politics on this podcast. No, everything's no great. I am having a wonderful time.
This is a great, great time to be alive. Yeah, and my one of my favorite scenes, and it's on like all the posters, and if you look for any promo of this, you're going to get the shot, is the reveal of the first underwater Nazi zombie.
So, okay, so I've got some timestamps here
for
my favorites. But so 2850 mm-hmm. is the first time we see one of, so this is not a purely underwater one. There were some underwater shots before.
Yes.
But my first like go-to shot is 2850 mm-hmm. where you see the first underwater Nazi zombie rising from the water. Mm-hmm. And it's this great wide shot.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And then, and you know, there, and first of all, let's talk about this. These uniforms that they've been wearing, these are amazing.
They're in incredible condition.
They've been underwater for, 30 years at this point?
Yes.
And they look great.
They creepily sleep underwater. There's this shot. God, it's so creepy. Where they show how they're, like, grouped up along the shore there, like, under a reef, you know, almost like crabs would do, you know, and they sleep underwater. It's really weird. And they sleep in like shallow water, like right up a net, right up against the reef. And it's kind of creepy. I don't know why, but yeah.
But they're these, you know, very snappy, I hate to say something nice about Nazi uniforms, but they're these very snappy, well-preserved Nazi uniforms. And then they also have these very stylish sunglasses/underwater goggles.
Yeah, they're goggles. Yeah, and I think they did that for the actors. I don't know. It's a good design choice, though. It looks really cool.
I'm just saying, you could sell those.
Oh, I know. And there's like no makeup either. I was mentioning it to you. They made them pale, and they put like little scabs on them, and they dyed their hair white. Boom, and put them in an SS uniform, and that's it. I mean, the effort they put into, these poor actors had to walk underwater with weights for hours a day, just coming up every 20 seconds for air. I'm sure they had scuba divers to give them air, but we who knows? Yeah, at this point. There's a lot of shots of them just walking across the bottom of the seafloor. A lot of shots of that. And so this is the first time at 2850 that we see one come up.
And it's so great. It's not slow motion, but it's a slow rise. You know, that Nazi face, the zombie face coming out of the water. It's a very sort of,
like Navy SEAL look, you know, comes slowly up out of the water.
And
John Rambo.
Another note about pacing is that it reminded me a little bit of Friday the 13th, the pacing of it, in that up until about 50 minutes into the movie, you know, there's an individual or two who gets picked off when they make the great mistake of going out by themselves.
Mm-hmm.
But the real confrontation where the melee starts doesn't happen until about 50 minutes in, almost an hour.
Yeah.
When the sort of, you know, the whole Nazi zombie army, which is what, like 8 of them? There's not a lot of
them. Well, they make it look like there's way more, but they only casted 8 guys to do it. And there's one rather large one, and the rest of them look, you know, small, skinny, stereotypical German Nazi SS uniform guys, but there's one really big one. But anyway, I like how they did that. They only casted 8 stuntmen, and these are stuntmen. These aren't actors, and they make it look like it's 100, or well, maybe not 100, but like 50 or so live on this island. It's pretty cool. I love it when films get creative because they have a terrible budget.
We've got $20 for these zombie extras. What are we gonna do?
Yeah. And they're also, I hope I'm not jumping ahead of ourselves, they don't like sunlight in their eyes.
That's right. Someone accidentally discovers that if you rip off those goggles, they're sort of helpless.
They freak out, yeah. And that comes into play towards the end with Mustache Zac Efron. But yeah, there's very little effects used in the film, and it's effective. But I will say about this scene, when the Nazi comes out of the water, he slowly comes out of the water and then very quickly comes towards the camera, which is like, it's a pretty effective jump scare. I don't like jump scares. This one was pretty effective. And there's not a lot in the film. This one was obviously, in case you didn't know, this is the monster kind of jump scare.
Right.
Which we knew, and it's on the damn poster. But yeah, it's a really effective jump scare, actually. I was kind of impressed with it.
Another great scene with a timestamp is at 43:46, which is right about the time all hell breaks loose in terms of the entire zombie Nazi army coming for the survivors on the island. You know, they've ignored. At this point, I think they've gotten a stronger warning from Peter Cushing's
character. Yeah, he's given them exposition now. He's sat down. Yeah. Probably my favorite line in the film, and it's Peter Cushing, of course, and it's right when he's about to sit down and give them the backstory, basically, of what happened. He says, "You are indeed very stupid."
More in my emails.
Yeah, and it's talking about how he gave them the chance to leave and they didn't take it. And
but again, yeah, he gave them the chance to leave, but he didn't really, he didn't explain the full situation until around like the 45-minute mark where he sits him down and he says, all right, let's talk.
Yeah, and in a horror film, human curiosity is always going to get the better of the cast every time. And then, they're curious.
Yeah, and then he tells them, okay, look, this is what's going on. Mm-hmm. And he explains that what we've already said, at the end of the war, we were trying to make these super soldiers.
Yep.
I was a Nazi SS commander. Mm-hmm. I was put in charge of these underwater Nazi zombies. We used them for a while, but we had to take them out of the field because we couldn't control them.
They were killing each other.
They were killing our own soldiers.
And so his like whole job and life goal is to make sure they don't leave the island.
Yeah. So
no one comes to the island.
He gets them on a boat. He takes them out here near this island. He sinks the boat. He assumes they will stay underwater in it forever. And then he holds up in this mansion in the jungle and figures that's the end of it.
Until the day he dies. I mean, that's how dedicated to the job he is.
He is, for whatever else you want to say about a former Nazi SS commander, he understood his final role there. But then, of course, the pleasure boaters show up, wake up the zombie Nazis, and now they're coming. But he finally tells them at this point that this is what you're up against, and you got to get out of here right now. It's the only chance that you have. And if I see you again, and then he pulls out one of, what's it, a Ruger, those old German pistols?
Yeah, it's a coveted pistol, especially during the war. All the U.S. troops wanted the Ruger. Because it was like, hey, I got this from a Nazi, you know?
Oh, you took it off. And I'll say,
yeah.
So he pulls one of those out, cocks it, chambers it. I don't know what the correct gun terminology is. Mm-hmm. It basically says, not only do you have a problem with my underwater Nazi zombies, but if I see any of you again, I'm going to shoot you.
Yeah, he's very adamant about them leaving. I mean, it's his job. And I'm sure not that any Nazi person ever had any empathy towards another person ever. But it seems like he knows this is the only way to get them to leave, and he doesn't want people to be murdered.
And he does give them one tip. Mm-hmm. Your boat's broken. Mm-hmm. I have a boat. Mm-hmm. It's a little sailboat. It should be just big enough for all of you to get out of here.
Yeah.
If you leave, like, in the next few hours, I think the tides will be favorable. Mm-hmm. He tells them which direction the nearest inhabited island is.
Yep.
You know, he gives them a little checklist. Yep. If you can just get your idiot selves in this boat and get off this island in the next couple of hours, you've got a real shot.
But of course they don't.
They don't. They're like, they're worried about their luggage.
Yeah.
The used car salesman doesn't want to leave his suitcase.
What about our yacht? It's funny, too, because the first, like, murder... And it's interesting. I'm going to point this out. They don't like eat human flesh, or they don't eat these people. Like,
nope, they just drown them.
They just drown them, and that's it. But anyway, I love how in a movie about fascist zombies, the first victim is a blue collar working man.
I was really disappointed by that because it's the cook on the boat.
Yeah, and Joe.
It's Joe. Yeah, it's not that he's without. He's a little gross.
Average Joe over here.
He's pretty crude.
Yeah, he is.
His kitchen is decorated with what seems to be torn out pages from like Hustler and Playboy.
Centerfolds.
Yeah. I mean, it's So you know,
he's your salt of the earth working man. None of you. There's a line where he's like, "Well, none of you are going to do it, so I'll do it."
So he's not the most evolved human being, but he's by far from being the most objectionable person on this boat.
And the way he goes is something I've never seen before. It's interesting. He's killed by sea urchins, and like he's slowly running, trying to back away from a zombie that's coming towards him, and he steps on a gnarly looking sea urchin, which there's like a foreshadowing of that earlier when they're looking at the aquarium, and there's a sea urchin in there.
Oh, I missed that.
And he falls on a whole group of them. And then when they find him later, there's like spikes all in his face and all over his hands and everything. It's really like gnarly because I've always seen a sea urchin and went, nope, nope. Don't want anything to do with that. Don't want to go near it.
I don't want anything to do with anything that lives in the ocean.
It's a terrifying place.
We crawled out of it for a reason.
Yeah, we did. As a nerd, I'll say that we know more about the surface of the moon than we do the ocean on our own planet. But
Lovecraft tried to warn us.
Yeah, we'll get into the Lovecraft stuff at a later date.
But so I had started to say something about that timestamp at around 43 minutes, mm-hmm. where the heroine, the brunette, mm-hmm. She steps into the lagoon for a swim, mm-hmm. because she's not fully aware of the underwater Nazi danger yet.
Mm-hmm.
And I only mention it because it's just a beautiful shot. It's not terribly salacious. I mean, she's wearing a swimsuit. Yeah. Salacious is the word I'm looking for.
I think so.
Thank God I went to college.
Yeah, me too.
But no, she's just stepping into the lagoon for a swim. She's wearing a swimsuit, but it's just a beautiful shot. That was one of my favorite shots.
Yeah, it's a wide shot. The lagoon's beautiful. It looks very peaceful, and it's almost to like disarm you. Yeah, it's almost to like disarm you because the shit's about to happen. And I believe that's right before she finds Average Joe with sea urchins on his face.
I think you're right.
Yeah, that's how she finds him.
And then 7 minutes later, timestamp 50, maybe 8 seconds, 50 minutes, 8 seconds.
Mm-hmm.
That's when, the cat and mouse game is over. The zombie army comes out of the ocean en masse. See, en masse. I went to college.
And it's like, they do like.
That's fucking France. Student loans are going to haunt me until I die. I'd much rather face underwater Nazi zombies than my student loan company. Mm-hmm. Anyway. But 50 minutes, 8 seconds, the zombie army, they come out of the ocean, and it's from there, it's just, here they are. Right?
It's like four different shots of the same eight guys coming out of the water,
too. You're right, though. They do make it look much more.
Yeah, and they're all, like, scattered in one shot and closer together in another. They do a pretty good job of making it look like more than just eight zombies. And again, their uniforms look stunning.
Of course.
I hate that.
They got great tailors.
Mm-hmm, I know.
Of course, they were probably all slave labor. And then at timestamp 52:41, 52 minutes, 41 seconds, that's when you get the used car salesman telling his wife, when I want your opinion, I'll ask for it. And this is, they're arguing about what should go in the tiny dinghy that might save them.
Yeah.
And everyone, damn.
Yeah.
Everyone who isn't an idiot is trying to tell this moron, hey, we're actually just trying to save our lives.
Mm-hmm.
So you're going to have to leave your luggage.
Yeah, like, man, they're so annoying.
And of course, as
they're in this film to die.
Well, the used car salesman is.
Yeah,
I felt sorry for his wife. She seemed okay too.
Yeah, I mean, she's just stuck in a marriage.
She really is. And she's lame. And there's so many scenes where it's obvious that the role she's taken on in life is trying to be his interpreter,
mm-hmm.
and convince him to be reasonable, even though that's sort of a fool's errand.
Yeah. Hey, he's speaking with his emotions. I'll go ahead and tell you what he meant by that. Yeah, it seems that way too. I agree. Ugh, poor her.
But the good news is, at 1 hour and 2 minutes, the used car salesman gets it.
He gets it.
And it's a great shot because he's stumbling around. He's lost. I think he's actually abandoned his wife at this point.
Yeah,
he's a terrible husband.
Yeah, I believe he's by himself. Mm-hmm.
And there's a great shot of him in the foreground and one of those underwater Nazi zombies just rising right behind him to the side.
Mm-hmm.
Nice, nice pacing. And you know what's going to happen. And quite frankly, at this point, you're ready to see this guy go.
Yeah. It's almost an applause moment. The character is written to die. I mean, You have no sympathy for him. You have no empathy for him. He's a terrible person again. And when he gets it, you're happy. And I love horror movies. Horror movies do this a few times. They'll introduce you to a character, and you're like, oh, this person needs to die.
Yeah,
and
then guess what
they
do?
They give it to you. Yeah, A lot of horror movies do that.
You got to make you wait for it, though. Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah. No, they got to marinate it first, and then you can take a bite.
We have to marinate the horrible people.
Then you can take a bite. And then our next timestamp, 1 hour and 22 minutes into the film, it's the climax.
This is the climax. Mm-hmm. So at this point, I'm not going to say spoiler
alert. Again, short film.
I'm not going to say spoiler alert because if you're listening to us before you watch these movies or if you're expecting no spoilers, it's the wrong podcast. Mm-hmm. But at this point, 1 hour, 22 minutes in, almost everybody's dead. Mm-hmm. What you've got is our heroine. Mm-hmm. And then you've got our assistant navigator on the boat.
Zac Efron with a mustache.
That is so good.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
They're the last two, and they've got themselves a rowboat, and they are rowing for their lives, literally. They like everybody else is gone. It's just the two of them.
Yeah, you think they're going to make it.
The Zac Efron mm-hmm. character has, you know, he's handled himself really well throughout the movie. Mm-hmm. He's mm-hmm. tried to take care of these other people. Mm-hmm. He's never displayed abject cowardice. Mm-hmm. In fact, he probably could have gotten away by himself just fine.
Yeah.
If he'd been intent on it, but
if it was just him and Rose, they would have made it.
Yeah, from the beginning.
But they have the used card salesman to deal with.
But at this point, it is just him and Rose.
Yeah.
They're in a rowboat. Mm-hmm. He's rowing like hell. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, one of the underwater Nazi zombies rises from the water. Jumps out of the water. Mm-hmm. Grabs him, drags him off the boat. There's a struggle.
He rips. It's so funny to me because it's just a wide shot of one single Nazi zombie standing in like... It's like almost knee deep water. They're on a mud bank, he calls it.
That water looked a lot deeper when I was watching them row.
Yeah, and you just see the zombie, and then all of a sudden you see mustache Zac Efron jump across the screen real fast and rip the guy's goggles off, and then fall back into the water. Like it's almost like. I don't know. I watched football growing up and played football and still enjoy the sport. It's almost like he intercepted the ball coming across the screen. He just he flies. I mean, he's like horizontal with the ground when he takes these goggles off. It's a real funny shot, but it's
also the thing that allows Rose to get away.
Yes.
Because he's temporarily mm-hmm. disabled because mm-hmm. you know, you can't be an underwater Nazi zombie without your special goggles.
And you think for one second the couple, they're going to make it.
You do.
They're going to have a life together.
Yeah, you really think so.
Yeah. And then another
Or at Nazi least zombie. A really nice weekend in a 5-star hotel.
Yes. And then another Nazi zombie jumps out, grabs him, and we don't know what happens to him for a second. And then we see the floor window of the boat.
So this is the only shitty rowboat that has a window at the bottom.
Man, yeah.
And it's specifically so we can see our poor hero's now drowned face mm-hmm. in this 4 feet of water.
Eyes open, mouth open. Yeah. You know,
drift under it so that mm-hmm. Rose can have this horrible last little postcard.
Like, why would Peter Cushing's character install a window in a 100-year-old flat-bottom wooden
boat? He had a lot of time on his hands out there.
Also, Peter Cushing met his demise. We missed this part. Right after he left the group and told them about everything and that he was going to kill them, he's marching through the jungle of this island, and he decides to stop and wash his face in a pool, and he sees a zombie, and the zombie grabs his throat and drags him under, and that's it.
His credit, he was in the process of attempting to order them back to dormancy or something. Mm-hmm. He's screaming at him in German.
Yeah. Yeah, he screams at
him. He goes out to look for them. Apparently in an mm-hmm. effort to get them back under control.
Yeah. Yeah, that's what it... Yeah, that's correct. That's what it is. It's not that he's just fleeing the scene or anything. Yeah,
there's nowhere for him. He knows that. He's in there for life.
Yeah. So, it's interesting. This picketing is pointless. Let's talk... So, yeah, that's the film, basically. Well, of course, our heroine escapes.
She does. She's floating. Again, and this takes us back to the very beginning. Mm-hmm. She's found floating in this dinghy and rescued by a fisherman and his son who give her water and, you know, eventually get her back to some place where she can...
And then there's a twist.
Get medical treatment.
So we hear her say again the exact line that she said at the beginning. Like, I don't know how I ended up on this boat. I don't remember what happened. And then she says it again and again and again and again. And she's writing it over and over and the same phrase over and over and over again in her little book in like the hospital. So what I got from that was this whole experience made her insane.
But she's doing the voiceover.
I know.
But at the beginning, she's she is sane, and it's obviously her sort of point of view that's telling the story, or at least her recollections that are telling the story.
It was just a weird loop for me because I was like, well, but she ends up saying the exact same thing that she said to narrate the beginning. So it's like she relives like her trying to explain why she was found in the boat over and over and over and over and over, and over again. And I don't know. That's what I caught from it because it's what she was writing down in the book. And she says it three times. And I'm like, why would they have this actress say it three freaking times after we heard it at the beginning of the film, too? So I think she went nuts from this. It gives it this like doom and gloom ending, which I love in any horror movie. If you've got a happy ending in a horror movie, get out. But let's talk about Nazi human experimentation.
Oh, my God. Speaking of real horror.
That's the theme of this film. There's a lot of films like this that it's like a whole subgenre of horror is Nazi zombies.
Yeah, I mean that weird radio, you know, news style voiceover at the beginning where they're talking about all those experiments. That's the thing that actually happened and is, of course, much more horrifying than anything you're going to find in a silly horror movie.
Yeah, I mean, if you needed another reason to despise fascism, here it is. Human experimentation. I don't know how, it doesn't necessarily go with political fascism, but it went with the Nazis. And again, punch your local Nazi if you can. That would be great. So the Nuremberg Code was written, first and foremost, it's about the voluntary consent of the human subject is absolutely essential. So this was written it was written in around like 1943 when they had discovered what the Nazis were doing to people. And one of the things I found interesting.
So a lot of our modern research protocols and or prohibitions are a direct result of that.
Of this, yes.
Of medical ethics.
Yes. They something that interests me a lot is they did work on twins, and I'm a twin, so that was a little stressful to read about. They would take like conjoined twins, not just identical twins, but conjoined twins as well, and they would kill one to see if the other would survive. They did that with identical twins too to see how it would affect. Just kill them. You know, we're gonna take these twins. They're probably Jewish, and we're gonna
Or something subgroup that they felt that they could get away with.
Yeah, you know, fascism. And
when I said subgroup, I didn't mean as in, I just meant viewed by Nazis as a subgroup.
Yeah.
It's so weird. We're in a time where I feel like I have to point this out.
Well, it's true, though. We do live in a time where you should point that out. Look, it's
for the record, Levi and I think Nazis are bad.
Yeah. Let's just go ahead and clear that up.
And even when we watch a silly movie about them, we still think they're bad.
Their uniforms are cool.
They had some, yeah, the uniforms.
Their weapons are cool. The Luger's cool.
Tailors were fantastic. They were probably all prison labor, but they were fantastic.
But, so they had these Nuremberg trials to basically stop them working on twins and other people and having just committing terrible atrocities. But everyone knows the Nuremberg trials, or I've heard of the Nuremberg trials, and they're quite famous, but very little is known about Nazi human experimentation at the time of the Nuremberg trials. The doctor trial, otherwise known as the medical case, changed that. And I want to read a quote from the chief of counsel of prosecution, Brigadier General Telford Taylor, delivered an opening statement at the Nuremberg Tribunal. He says, quote, "The defendants in this case are charged with murder, torture, and other atrocities committed in the name of medical science. The victim of these crimes are numbered in the hundreds of thousands. A handful are still alive. A few of the survivors will appear in this courtroom. But most of these miserable victims were slaughtered outright or died in the course of the tortures to which they were subjected. For the most part, they are the nameless dead. To the murderers, these wretched people were not individuals at all. They came in wholesale lots and were treated worse than animals." End quote. So, yeah, Nazis sucked.
if we can't get any more into that. And when they came into the ethical part, the medical ethical part, the medical ethical, that's when the Nuremberg Code was written, mostly about the unethical methods used by Nazi physicians to set a general agenda for all future ethical and legal questions pertaining to the conduct of human experimentation.
I know there was also a lot of ethical debates over whether the results of that research should ever be used, even if it might benefit innocent people.
Yeah, and that was part of the trials too. So how do you get, so the thing about that is, how do you get said result without doing the terrible thing, you know, even if it did benefit mankind?
Or once the research has been done, mm-hmm. once it's known, I mm-hmm. mean, once you have these results, if the results might benefit an innocent who's suffering from some illness, mm-hmm. is it ethical to use them? Or is the ethical thing to do to just gather it all and burn it?
And burn it, which a lot of it was. A lot of the research done is either held or was destroyed. But then the Moscow Declaration of German Atrocities was released on November 1st, 1943, and it was signed by Roosevelt, Churchill, and Stalin. And it basically said that Nazi physicians must be sent back to the country in which they committed their crimes and will be tried by the new free government of that country because, you know, the Nazis ruled that country that they were in.
Yeah.
The United Nations comes in and implements a free government, and then that free government punishes those Nazi bastards.
Unlike the rocket scientists who we just invited over and gave nice ranch-style homes to in the desert.
Can y'all do some things for us? Yeah,
you guys were so good with those V2s. Yeah. We'd like to go to space.
Yes. But when it came to human experimentation and human atrocities, there was little to no mercy shown, which is great because they didn't deserve it. They did some terrible things. Again, I'll say it again. Fascism is terrible. Reminder, everyone. Fascism is terrible there.
What? And this is, again, a bit off topic for a silly movie, but, you know, I was complaining at the very beginning of the podcast just about my mood and 2020 in general, but so much of what I think a lot of us are struggling with is just the feeling that we're going backwards.
Mm-hmm.
There's, at least I have this feeling that, you know, civilization as a whole or our grandparents
mm-hmm.
solved through a lot of sacrifice and blood and whatever else,
mm-hmm.
so many of these problems, and now we have to revisit them?
Yeah, my grandfather, and I'm sure many, many other grandfathers went over there to, I mean, they went over there and died to stop this.
My dad, he was older when I was born. He was 54 when I was born in 1978, but he served at the end of World War II by lying mm-hmm. about his age,
mm-hmm.
Was an airplane mechanic, was injured, not in combat, but mm-hmm. because the day before he was due to be discharged, a fellow GI in a Jeep ran him over while drunk. So he got to spend like another year in a hospital. But,
mm-hmm.
but anyway, there's a whole generation of people whose lives were permanently suspended or temporarily suspended or permanently altered or ended in all of these ways to end something that we all agreed was a sort of universal human evil.
Terrible thing.
And I don't want to overemphasize how much of fascism we may be seeing or may not be seeing in contemporary society, but the fact that you have to argue with it at all.
Yeah, is
to me is
troubling.
And you know, and this, I think this applies not just to fascism, but to some other ideas that we thought were dead.
Mm-hmm.
We thought they were dead, and we, as a society, we paid a huge price to get rid of them.
And now they're coming out of the waterworks.
And now we have to have the argument again.
Yeah, and
we have to have the argument again.
People literally sell Nazi flags, and it's not as like war memorabilia anymore. It's a stance, you know.
Oh no! I mean, what last year in our community here in Fayetteville, they mm-hmm. have an annual rally called
Biker
Bikes,
rally.
Blues, and
yeah.
Barbecue.
Yeah,
you know, and it's for bikers, and most of the folks are fine. You know, I'm not saying that most of those people are Nazis or fascists or, mm-hmm. or anything like that. Most of those folks are perfectly nice people. They're just weekend warriors who like, you know, they're dentists or whatever who like to jump on a bike,
change
ride across country.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, and spend a weekend drinking, which mm-hmm. is fine. Who doesn't want to do that?
Great.
But you would go around to some of the vendor booths and you would find
Nazi flags.
Nazi flags, Nazi mm-hmm. memorabilia, mm-hmm. The, you know, swastikas.
And this weekend in Pennsylvania,
as though it were cute.
Another, yeah, and this weekend in Pennsylvania, there was a vendor. I saw photos. He had Nazi flags for sale. Nazis play the ultimate evil in a lot of films.
They're the perfect video game enemies because you just slap a new clip in and
I mean, they deserve empty it. I don't know. That's a hard stance for me. They deserve it. They're people too. I don't know. Man, it's just, I thought it was over. It's coming out of the surface of the water again. And here we are living shockwaves all over again in 2020.
For me, so much of this year, or the last 18 months even, has just been like all these problems that were supposed to be solved. Mm-hmm. All of these matters that were supposed to be settled.
We're going backwards.
And we can't make progress in our own generation if we have to fight the last generation's fights all over again because mm-hmm. of what? I don't know. Memes?
Yeah. History repeats itself. It's
All right. Listen, folks. We want to thank everyone who's left a review. You know, this is only our fourth episode. So far you guys have left, I think, eight.
Yeah, thank you guys
Eight reviews on iTunes, which is so nice. It's not iTunes anymore. It's the Apple directory. I'm mm-hmm. so old. I remember Sorry. iTunes. Mm-hmm. And people have left more specific reviews. Please do that. I know it sounds silly, but the leaving a review, even if it's just, you know, clicking how many stars you think we deserve, really does make a difference. And the algorithms picking up the podcast and recommending it. We have an Instagram account now, to Levi.
Yeah, it's
Well-Adjusted Podcast.
At Well_Adjusted Podcast.
Well_Adjusted Podcast. I think if you just search for Well-Adjusted Podcast, you'll find it.
It should come up.
On Instagram.
And we'll be posting, you know, weekly, usually. It doesn't matter. We post about the episodes.
Yeah, and we'll probably post more there, just screen caps and such of some of our favorite horror films. Yeah. But anyway, if you want to get in touch with us, just direct message us there on the Instagram.
Please, if you have a suggestion for a film you'd like for us to talk about, or a book, or a comic, or a painting, please DM us on Instagram.
And you know, we'll definitely read it, and we'll probably even answer because we're very lonely people.
Hence the podcast.
We're so lonely.
And I think that wraps it up. Thanks, guys. Happy Labor Day, and go punch your local Nazi.
Or, you know, just don't be a fascist. Watch a movie.